At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Raising Health, where we explore the real challenges and enormous opportunities facing entrepreneurs who are building the future of health. I'm Olivia.
And I'm Chris. Today's episode is with Tom Hale, CEO of Aura. He is joined by Vijay Pandey, general partner, and Daisy Wolf, investment partner at A16Z Bio and Health.
Tom talks about the power of wearables to change behavior and how that can have an effect on health.
But I think there's a whole other universe of behaviors that drive health outcomes. And education is always a big part of that. But the reality is getting people to change their behavior is really dependent on the inputs that you're giving to the person who needs to change their behavior and their willingness to change. And I think wearables have a really important role to play because one, they're on your body all the time, so they're giving you that feedback. Two, they're there to sort of like hold you a little bit accountable and maybe a little bit to give you some feedback, support, nudging to kind of change your behaviors.
They also get into how AI could increase the power of wearables and the insights coming from this technology.
AI has actually already been maybe properly spoken, machine learning, and probabilistic inference and prediction. That actually is a lot of what wearables do. They take a signal that they measure and they use an algorithm, usually keyed to some gold standard reference data set and trained on, for us, for example, it's 1200 nights of polysomnography measured sleep, to understand how accurate the predictions that the machine learning, or whatever you want to call it, AI or machine learning, using those algorithms makes the prediction about what's going on.
You're listening to Raising Health from A16Z Bio and Health.
It is our pleasure to have Tom Hale, a CEO of Aura, on Raising Health. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Vijay. Thank you, Daisy. It is awesome to be here.
I was very, very excited to get an Aura ring for Christmas. I love everything quantified self, and I'm curious to understand your journey with Aura. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you came to be at Aura.
Yeah. So I grew up primarily as a software person in tech, worked at a variety of companies, marketplace companies for rentals, macromedia, developer tools, Adobe, really on the software side. But I have my own personal health journey, which really, I think, started with fitness, but then, you know, moving through COVID and having kids and struggling with relatives with chronic disease conditions, I started really thinking intensely about like what was going on in the world around health. And then come fall of 21, I sort of had a weird confluence of things happen to me. I had sold a company, which we then unsold because shareholders turned down the deal. Family was going through some real stress post-COVID. And I lost sleep for the first time in my entire life. I'm literally a championship sleeper, I will tell you. Like, just ask anybody. I am amazing. I can fall asleep in a second and stay asleep like a log. But I was losing sleep. And in this moment of like both stress and maybe even like realizing that I needed to do something, I bumped into Aura. And in the space of about 6 weeks, I got educated about sleep. And I'd always thought about wearables as a fitness wearable. You know, like that's sort of where I started with like literally the little pod in the base of your old Nike shoes. I don't know if you even remember that.
But oh, I had that too. Yeah.
I had never experienced anything quite like Aura. The real impact was that through being educated and making some small behavioral changes that were reinforced by the data that Aura was sort of displaying to me, I changed my life. I went from staying up late, staring at my phone, watching Netflix, drinking alcohol, drinking coffee the next day because I felt bad from drinking the alcohol, eating whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And, you know, I didn't sleep in a dark room or a cool room or a quiet room, and I just didn't think about it. And I realized when I started making some small edits to my life that I could change the quality of my lived experience by like an order of magnitude. You know, sleep is this sort of wonder drug. And the thing is, like, I think from early career to having young kids, I went through this period of being sleep deprived for 20 years. And so at the end of that, where I started to really think about this, it was a life changer for me. So at that point, I was like, oh my God, I need to be involved in this company. No product has ever had an impact on me in the way this product has. I need to. And they were doing a CEO search at the time. And that's what got me started into it. And I've been there now for 2 years.
Well, yeah, that actually takes us to sort of a natural question of just how do you think of the Aura product and not just the ring, but it's the ring and the app and the whole experience.
Yeah.
You know, do you think of that as like a consumer product, or do you think of it as a healthcare product or some other category?
I think it's both.
Okay.
And I think maybe this is a part of a larger trend, which is the consumerization of healthcare, which obviously I think you guys have a lot of thoughts about. One of the fundamental realizations was that a wearable is really at some level something that's monitoring your health. And the information that it's giving you, we call it giving your body a voice, it's giving you both information and maybe even advice and insights on what to do on a day-to-day behavioral basis. Great. But the insight was it should fit into your life in a really seamless way. And I think one of the great sort of maybe design elements of Aura is that by constraining itself to a ring and having a goal of being kind of seamless in the background, a number of things fell out of that. Really long battery life. It's not constantly asking for your attention. It's not another digital mouth for you to feed. Trying to be like instructive, but not judgmental in terms of the tone of the software. Thinking of itself as calm tech, not as excitable tech. It's not there to tell you like, you know, do this, do that. It's there to support you. And thinking about sort of consumer and healthcare, maybe, or consumer and medical combined, like I think there's always been a division, and that division has been like, if it's healthcare, it's white, it's expensive, it's gleaming, a doctor needs to use it, you can't understand it, it's too complicated, you wouldn't understand, you didn't go to med school. And the reality is that I think over the past 20 years, consumers have gotten way more educated about health. Dr. Google, you know, WebMD, all the information is available on the internet. Some of it's more trustworthy than others, but like agency is available for people to have. Scientific papers, broadly available, so people can be on the cutting edge of what's going on. And I would say just general literacy around health has moved dramatically. So I think of it as both. It is both a health device and a consumer device. They're part of the same thing. I think this is really maybe to that point about being kind of both, you guys called it out actually, being both a consumer company and a health company, because the sort of things that work well for a consumer tech company may not be the exact same things that work well for a health company. For us, it really takes the form of being partnered with both research institutions, with raw foundational both science, meaning like what is the physiology of sleep and understanding that and understanding it across different populations. What's the physiology of health, or how it does an intervention affect you? How does it affect your metrics? And looking actually at the technologies that might enable that and what they might mean. So health is about data at its heart. And being able to look into a data set and use that data to train an algorithm, I think that's where that intersection really pays off.
Where do you think there will be the biggest impact of wearables, like the Oura Ring or others? Like you spoke about sleep being so fundamental. You know, where do you think this goes from here?
Yeah, look, it's a great question because it's so broad, right? If you think about, let's just call the healthcare industry, you know, $4 trillion of annual spend in the United States alone, maybe double that outside, maybe, you know, it's close to. And you think about the effectiveness of that spend, particularly in the U.S., it's not very effective. And there's lots of waste, there's, you know, powerful incentives, there's really the focus of that spend is on people who are in, you know, conditions of acute sickness, maybe at the end of life. The sort of macro trend, I think, that maybe wearables are a part of and maybe a important agent of is this trend towards preventative health. And I don't think intervening with illnesses and trying to fight cancer or help someone recover from heart attack is ever going to go away. But I think there's a whole other universe of behaviors that drive health outcomes. And education is always a big part of that. But the reality is getting people to change their behavior is really dependent on the inputs that you're giving to the person who needs to change their behavior and their willingness to change. And I think wearables have a really important role to play because one, they're on your body all the time, so they're giving you that feedback. Two, they're there to sort of like hold you a little bit accountable and maybe a little bit to give you some feedback, support, nudging to kind of change your behaviors. Why does that matter? Why does behavior matter? Well, if you look at the things that are leading causes of mortality, most of them, maybe 60%, rough justice, are driven by behaviors. Whether it's your diet, your exercise, your sleep, certainly a factor, your stress levels, your bad habits like smoking or drinking, or what, you know, all the things that are really behavioral are actually the things that drive the number one and number two killers and burden in our healthcare system, which is heart and metabolic. Okay. Maybe there's some things around genetics, and there are certainly things around your environment. Wearable's not going to help you with that, but it might help you actually manage it, might help you identify it. So I think it's this behavioral element that's so powerful. And I think that's where wearables and maybe the broader industry, we would think of ourselves as a personal health companion.
What you were saying, Tom, about how it's there to support you kind of passively really resonates with me. Like Aura is the only wearable I've ever consistently used over the course of many years. I think a huge part of that is battery life as well. I do fault you for kind of ruining alcohol for me.
Yeah, buzzkill, literally. The genesis of alcohol affecting Aura users is really two things. It's one, your sleep. Your REM sleep really goes to hell in a handbasket when you drink. I don't know if you've ever noticed it. You sort of have more vivid dreams. You're actually sleeping you know, closer to being awake after having, you know, a bottle of wine or something like that before you go to bed. The second thing, of course, is that your next day, your readiness, really, it shows you what you probably feel, which is you don't always feel like hungover the next day, but you don't always feel great either. And what you really see that is that alcohol has that behavior. And it is the number one reported behavioral modification that people, you know, adopt after sleep with Oura Ring.
We should do a PSA. Any entrepreneurs who are building solutions to this problem to make alcohol not ruin your sleep, we would love to speak with you.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what it is. It's non-alcoholic alcohol. It's not going to get you buzzed, but I'll give you that sensation.
I'm not settling for that. Tom, 20 years from now, what do you think wearables will look like and how will human health change as a result? Like, are we going to have wearable contact lenses? Like physically, what will this look like and what will we know? I assume we'll have intravenous things.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to hazard some guesses, you know, I would say one, they'll be ubiquitous, meaning everyone will have something and it'll probably talk to their smartphone or whatever the equivalent of their smartphone is. And there'll probably be some kind of local AI machine learning interface that is really tuned to you. You know, it might be the model that's based on your data, your context, your history, all that stuff. And it'll be part of your experience, I think. I think there will be other modes of sensing, but I'll go out on a limb and say that for most people who are not, you know, undergoing some really acute healthcare crisis, something that's non-invasive, something that is fits into your life seamlessly, that feels like a piece of jewelry or a piece of clothing that you wear, that isn't, you know, intrusive in any way, I think is probably going to be the answer that most people will adopt. If you get a new knee today, they put a sensor inside your new knee, which tells the doctor how the thing is working. But, you know, again, going back to sort of the realities of electronics and charging and, you know, warranty defects, you don't want to have a surgery to have something removed. I think there will be implantables. I think there will be consumables. There'll be all sorts of things that are going to be incredibly novel and interesting. But I think the universal one is going to be something that's non-invasive. Now, I think the last thing I would say is there's lots of really interesting things that are happening here that are new sensing capabilities that are on the leading edge. I mean, there's been a lot of really interesting work about using radio frequency. I mean, depending on how you feel about electromagnetic radiation, you may or may not be interested, but there's certainly things that you know can be done with that. You think about all the work that's done around looking at the chemical composition of your skin and the electrical composition of your skin. There's a really interesting set of signals that come through there. I think clothing is potentially interesting. We've seen some very interesting stuff where people are putting on clothes and it really gives you a lot of feedback about their gait, their posture, their fitness, their composition. Do I think that becomes ubiquitous? Probably not. Probably not. I think it's use case dependent.
What do you think would make the successful wearables of the future? Like you described all these amazing technologies, but you know the technology doesn't always make it into the killer product, right?
I think it comes back to utility and in some sense the cost required to get that utility. I mean, tracking is great, but if tracking becomes a work item that consumes time from your day, you're less inclined to do it. We see this all the time with meal tracking, right? That's sort of you do it for a while and then you kind of learn that the work isn't worth the effort. So I think whatever it's going to be really elegant and integrated into your life. And it's going to feel like something that doesn't feel like work, but it does feel like a guardian angel or, you know, the doctor in your pocket who's looking out for you and maybe even providing you guidance and feedback along the way. I think that's probably going to be the winning formula.
We started with the kind of basic step trackers, and now we're in this boom of AI. Can you speak to how AI is affecting wearable technology?
Yeah, AI has actually already been maybe properly spoken, machine learning and probabilistic inference and prediction. That actually is a lot of what wearables do. They take a signal that they measure and they use an algorithm, usually keyed to some gold standard reference data set and trained on, for us, for example, it's 1200 nights of polysomnography measured sleep, to understand how accurate the predictions that the machine learning or whatever you want to call it, AI or machine learning, using those algorithms makes the prediction about what's going on. And then on top of that is an interpretation layer, which is also using machine learning to determine, hey, which probabilistic input should we give back to you? Which prompt should we give back to you? The easy answer for wearables and AI today is, oh, you're going to have a chatbot. And that chatbot is going to, you know, it's going to tell you everything. It's going to know everything about you. And I think there's maybe some truth to that. I don't subscribe to the chat will be its interface, you know, view of the world. I think the power lies in the prediction and the personalization that it enables because it's powered by your data, by you, your context, and everything that your phone or your wearable knows about you and can know about you to give something insightful back to you. Calling out personalization, you know, I have a kind of a mental model around how I think healthcare is going to evolve. And, you know, I call it P2D2. it's personalization, meaning that your particular context and the healthcare that is provided to you or the preventative behavior nudges that are provided to you are personalized. It's precision, meaning it understands your genomics or your particular, you know, kind of phenotype or epigenome or whatever your particular health status is. It's distributed, meaning that health isn't, you know, going to be provided at the doctor's office or at the home. It'll be, you know, it'll be in your life. It'll be, you know, wherever you are, you're going to have some kind of health experience. And that might be a simple telemedicine call, or it might be an app or something like that, but it's going to be distributed and decentralized. And care will take this form. And by the way, you'll end up with different specialists in your life. You're not just going to have one doctor. You're going to have all these people who are part of your care team. It's amazing to think that everyone should have a care team. They absolutely should, and they will, I think. And then the last is that it's democratized. And I think this is something that Aura believes really strongly. We have a role to play, which is to both educate people, help them understand, but also to give them the agency to take charge of their health journey and not have it be, you know, health is some thing that's either, you know, mass produced at the lowest cost and the lowest quality, which is effectively, I think, what our healthcare system optimizes for today, for the maximum kind of like intervention at the end of life. But maybe more importantly, is available to everybody on the planet. You know, everyone's got a smartphone. This smartphone is a health device, and it could be an incredibly powerful health device, not just information, but like, you know, this thing should be able to do lots of things for me with regards to my health. And I think that's such a powerful idea that like, everyone on the planet could suddenly have access to care. I mean, we talk about care deserts in healthcare, right? Like there's enormous portions of the world that just don't get any care at all. Basic things, water, food, shelter. I mean, we've got some opportunities to improve the world.
Totally. And there are so many use cases. You know, you have some that are native to your app, and then you recently launched a partnership with Natural Cycles. Can you speak to, you know, particularly in the realm of AI, how you partner with other companies and research institutions?
Obviously, there's lots of people who have built solutions on top of the data that Aura collects. One really interesting one is called Apollo Neuro. They look at your intraday stress measure. We look at heart rate variability, temperature, respiration, activity. And we kind of come up with like, are you in one of these four or five stress states? And then they access that data. And then based on that data, they make a recommendation about a bilateral stimulation therapy, which is a wrist-borne wearable that resets your nervous system with a little like vibration. It's a very simple technology, but the point is that it's personalized to you and your moment. And they customize the intervention that they deliver. So that kind of, call it platform, where your data, whether it's how you're stressed, or did you sleep well, or are you getting sick? Do you have a temperature? What is your, how is your temperature changing? That's the natural cycles use case, because it's telling you where you are in your cycle. Based on the fact that we know where you are in your cycle, what should other apps know? What should your diet app know? What should the app you're using with your care team, what should it know? I think we're going to see this world where the data from Aura feeds the AIs that other people develop to create interventions or care plans or behavioral modification plans. I just think that's the way this is going to go. So we partner with consumer apps, we partner with technology companies, but we partner with research institutions. You know, I mentioned a couple like UCSF, UC San Diego, but we have a huge partnership with the University of Tokyo, the National University of Singapore, European institutions who are looking at heart health. We've really made a big investment here, because the truth is that I think for the medical community, if you don't have that scientific backing, you're not credible. It's very hard to be credible. And yes, you can get the FDA to approve you with you know, a lot of investment and effort. But at the end of the day, it's that trust that matters.
I'm curious if you'd share with us sort of your gut feeling for what the next big trends are in consumer health. You know, where do you see the field as a whole going to?
I think it's really important to understand that what's happening now is that the quality of the technology that's being made available to consumers is effectively clinical grade. And that the pace of innovation that's happening in the space is outstripping the ability for the regulators to kind of keep up with it. And they're putting guardrails in place to make sure that no one gets hurt or killed. That's what the FDA does, you know, they protect consumers and make sure that the technologies are work as advertised. But the things that are going to drive change in the next couple of years, I think women's health is a really interesting place for medicine to look, and mostly because they haven't invested there in the past. Whether that's changing the way research is conducted, or improving the types of research that's done, or even just measuring the differences of men and women in novel ways, and understanding that their physiology is not the same. A famous statement, a woman is not a small man. We've been very, very involved with people like the University of California, San Diego, and UC Berkeley, and UCSF, really focused on this idea of women's health, and in particular, both the journey over a life where your physiology changes every 30 days, give or take, based on your cycle. But it also changes as you move through your life and as you become pregnant and postpartum and perimenopause and menopause. As we look ahead, if you think about healthcare and consumer being two different types of worlds, I think we're going to start to see them really start to intersect in a really interesting way. And I'll give you an example where we see this today. We see this with concierge medicine docs, because they are very much about trying to find ways to improve your health and improve your longevity and health span. That's basically why you would pay a concierge doc. You don't go to them because you broke your arm or you're sick. You go to them because you want them to tell you how to live a longer, healthier life. They are huge adopters of the Oura Ring, for a couple of reasons. One is it's a very good, high quality, clinical grade stream of data, and we've got an interface for them so they can look and see what's going on with their patients who are wearing an Oura Ring. Second, it's a really good way to show value, because you're really involved with the person and what's going on with them. I give an example of somebody who was at a resort on a jet ski and like fell off the jet ski and hit his head. And, you know, within the day, his concierge medicine doc had called him and said, "Hey, what's going on? Like, your numbers went haywire." He's like, "Well, I hit my head." He says, "You need to go and get checked out, because I think you've got a concussion and it's a bad one." Now, that was his intuition. It's not like Aura magically determined he had a concussion, but there was enough of a deviation from his normal state that the doctor was concerned enough to do something about it. That's valuable. And I think we're really intrigued by how, call it, consumerization and medicine are coming together in this very interesting kind of almost preventative care model.
I mean, and it also sort of is very evocative of all the things that could be put into the app, you know, not that far from now. And actually, there's also fun things at population scale, right? I think if someone could monitor maybe anonymously, but you might be able to pick up even rising pandemics or things like that through temperature and so on.
Well, I will tell you something. During COVID, Aura conducted something called the TemPredict study with UCSF. 70,000 people And they were all wearing Oura rings. They had opted in to anonymously share their data as part of the study and also to share their health status. And the study demonstrated, because about 10,000 or so folks actually got COVID, demonstrated that based on biometrics, respiration, temperature, heart rate variability, 2 3/4 days before you were diagnosed or tested positive for COVID, it showed up in your numbers. And the algorithm that we built around that, which is called health risk management, you know, basically predicts whether or not you're going to get COVID. Now, that's a very powerful use case. We don't roll that out to people because it's, you know, it's a medical device effectively. But as you say, at population level, really interesting to kind of see what that might mean.
What are the things that you do consistently, or do you have any tips and tricks, you know, on a personal level outside of kind of the scientific recommendations?
I live a busy and complicated life. And so what I really do try to do is before I go to bed, I try and like give myself a half hour of like easing into it. Usually I fall asleep right away. So it's not like, sometimes I'll give myself a half hour, but it'll only be like 5 or 6 minutes. But the thing that I do most consistently is I take L-theanine and magnesium. I wear a sleep mask. I have never worn a sleep mask in my life. I've only started this from Oura, but it actually makes a big difference, the darkness. And I wear earplugs because I travel around and I'm in a lot of different places. You know, a bad night's sleep can be, you know, the garbage trucks arriving at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. or a siren going by or whatever it is. And if I have earplugs, like I don't even, nothing gets me. You know, if I have a hotel room next to the elevator and some party comes in at 3 a.m. and they've been having a good time, they don't have to impinge on my sleep.
I've been an earplugs and eye mask sleeper for like 15 years now. I've been told it's very sexy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's an important thing to be well slept. And I liken being well slept to sort of operating at your most effective, whether it's decision making. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of research. The classic one is this one from the NBA, where they divided two cohorts into sub-8-hour sleepers and more than 8-hour sleepers. And they looked at, you know, free throw percentages and 3-point percentages and fouls and all the things. Everyone performed better if they slept better, period, full stop. And this, by the way, changed the way the NBA managed games. They started giving people more time in between the games. If you remember, they were traveling every other day to play a game, sometimes two. And it was crazy. So they changed it. And this was the really interesting insight, is that when you were underslept, it wasn't just that you weren't as good, it was that you were actively bad.
Oh.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tom.
Well, thank you, Daisy. Thank you, BJ.
Thank you for listening to Raising Health. Raising Health is hosted and produced by me, Chris Tatiosian.
And me, Olivia Webb.
With the help of the Bio and Health team at A16Z. The show is edited by Phil Hegseth.
If you want to suggest topics for future shows, you can reach us at raisinghealth@a16z.com. Finally, please rate and subscribe to our show. The content here is for informational purposes only, should not be taken as legal, business, tax, or investment advice, or be used to evaluate any investment or security, and is not directed at any investors or potential investors in any A16Z fund. Please note that A16Z and its affiliates may maintain investments in the companies discussed in this podcast. For more details, including a link to our investments, please see a16z.com/disclosures.